it off the boards to center. Miley keeps the puck in. On the wing for Tavares in front of the net. They score! They score! Austin Matthews has won the game! The Leafs win it in overtime!
Yeah, it's emergency podcast time. Obviously, these guys are a good show. Ben Ennis, JD Hunkin. You don't blow a 3-goal lead in a playoff game and then become the first team in playoff history to respond to a 3-goal deficit in the following game and not get an emergency podcast. I didn't have a lot of tweets during the game last night, but I thought I had the one that summed it up. Like, you and I, we've been watching sports a long time. We've seen some crazy things happen in sports. That's up there among the craziest things we've ever seen. And that includes 2013 and the 4-1 lead against the Bruins in Game 7. All things being equal, obviously it's not a Game 7 and the stakes are different, but this was way more insane, a comeback when you're under 4 minutes to go and you score 3 6-on-5 goals.
I can't believe this happened. I woke up this morning and it was the exact opposite feeling I had the other night, where I woke up on Friday morning and it was just 5 seconds before I was reminded that the Leafs blew a 3-0 lead against the Columbus Blue Jackets and were a must-win hockey game that night. And yeah, it kind of just dragged along with me. You and I did this entire radio show. We were taking all these texts from different fans. I said that you can say whatever you feel, whatever you want to say is completely valid today, that hot takes are not off the table. It was a tough day for Leaf fans. I try to summarize it as this team means so much to this city. And this fan base has been through so goddamn much when it comes to sports, right? Like, we've all been through a pandemic. We understand that sports are it's not the most important thing in the world. But yeah, with relativity, Leaf fans are just in this horrific spot where they're in the salary cap league. They finally reach this team that is supposed to be something. And it's just that you feel like a prisoner. Like, all of this was for nothing. All of this losing was for nothing. Getting all of these young stars was for nothing because they didn't know how to win. And yesterday, you had to sit in that for basically 3 full periods, because Columbus gets on the board within the first few minutes of the game. It's the two killers the entire series in Cam Atkinson and Pierre-Luc Dubois, who combine on the 2-on-1. And all the hope, all the angst, it just bubbles right back up to the surface. And you just have to sit there with being behind in a hockey game for the entirety of the game. And
with the worst team that you want to be trailing in a hockey game too.
Exactly. A team that is just swallowing up everything, making zone entries impossible, making clean shooting lanes look impossible. And even when you're getting it to the net, they keep throwing up the graphic of Elvis Merzlikins, the Latvian goaltender who steps in for Korpisalo after he falls down 3-0 in the last game, who is just on fire. You know, they're talking about him, how he sees the puck so well and that he's so athletic, he'll do anything to make a save. And the few opportunities the Leafs have, he's taken them away. They have some power plays. They're nothing. They really don't do much. And really, the only positive sign in the game is the fourth line, which continue to play extremely well. Kyle Clifford, Jason Spezza, Pierre Engvall, the most threatening group on the ice. And even when they put the superstar lineup together of Matthews, Tavares, and Marner, they can't gain the zone. They can't really do anything with it. And you're still relying on this fourth line, not exactly supposed to be the signature of the Toronto Maple Leafs, to bring you some energy and to bring you some scoring chances. And so I can't think of a time where just the emotional state of a franchise and the thoughts of a franchise have flipped like this. Again, I don't follow every single team in sports. I'm sure there have been some moments that are kind of similar to this, but to go from the two extremes, the complete pit of despair that was Thursday night, to the unbelievable euphoria that you felt in those final 4 minutes, especially when the overtime horn sound, just to know that you were in it. Again, you kind of had to check yourself because the game wasn't over. You know, I called you and we did this quick phone call in between the break of just what the hell happened. We're both sitting there stunned. I didn't even see the first goal. I don't think you saw the first goal either.
The Leafs had. We're all forming our takes. We're getting ready for the postmortem of this,
exactly
this team this season? What does it mean? A wasted year? It's a, that. That's what's so amazing to me is that you can have, and we'll see what happens on Sunday, because again, yeah, just like you had to win that game in overtime, you have to win on Sunday for this to truly mean what it felt like it meant in the moment. But
yes,
everything changed in those 4 minutes and then the overtime. Everything changed because you had a conversation. Like the show that we had on Friday is basically the whole off season of dissecting the Toronto Maple Leafs, and nothing's off the table. And in a 4 minute span, that all goes away. And is that fair? And is that 100% accurate in the front office? Maybe not.
No.
But there's definitely some truth to that, man. Because who knows what happens now? I mean, if they win this series, they go on, they win another. Who knows what happens? But it all hinged in that four-minute span. And you can talk about that not being logical. That's just the reality.
No, it is. And
Chris Johnson on Sportsnet.ca, I mean, every reporter had their entire postmortem written and ready to be filed
in that moment.
Yeah, everybody had their tweets loaded up, and then you just put them back in the holsters. And all your takes about maybe there's a fatal flaw with this team. Maybe they don't have it. Maybe they don't have heart. Okay, maybe. But those were silenced as well, at least for one moment. And again, it can change on Sunday. To me, it's just amazing how much can change in one, not even a whole hockey game, because you mentioned it. They look pretty listless through 55 minutes of that hockey game.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as you were talking about this, I'm thinking about the Kelly Clarkson song, like a moment like this. You know, it's just like you just the people wait a lifetime. And it's just like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And this is exactly what happened here. Sports is something about it's about living in the moment. And right. This is what I was talking about with Habs fans who were apoplectic that their team won because they wanted a 1-8 shot at Alexis Lafreniere. It's like, no, you're missing the point. Okay. There is definitely something to be said about team building, but once you're in it, this is the thing that nothing else can replicate. There's a reason that you have to have a cable package or a subscription to an online service to watch sports, because there's nothing like it. There's nothing like live entertainment. There's nothing that can replicate the feeling of being a sports fan in a moment like that. And it's why you and I do what we do. It's why people invest in hockey teams and things that they cannot control, is because of this exact thing. And so, yeah, man, do the Leafs need to improve the blue line this offseason? Absolutely. Like, that doesn't change from a small moment, but just enjoy this right now. Like, if you're a Leaf fan, how many times have you been able to have something like this? How many times have you been the team that gets to laugh at the other group and say, oh my God, I can't believe we just did that? So few. I was thinking about it last night. There's absolutely no case to be made that the Leafs have had a better win than this since the lockout. Since they put a salary cap in, this is the best moment for the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise. This is the best moment for their fan base. There's nothing close. There's nothing that even compares to it. If you think that it's something else, it's one of the games against Boston, or it's, you know, the overtime winner against Washington with Kasperi Kapp, it's just not. It's this. Obviously, it's this. In fact, I'm making a straw man that anyone would even bring those things up. That's why I'm so happy today, man. I'm so happy today, not just because the Leafs won, but just because this franchise that has this diehard fan base that cares so deeply about this group, that elicits these reactions. People don't get mad about the Maple Leafs because they're bad fans. They get mad about the Maple Leafs, and they're so visceral in their reactions because they care so much about them. And yes, it was just nice to have this win. So we're going to talk a little bit about Game 5. We're going to set up Game 5, but this is a reaction pod to just the gut feeling of how special that moment was, how special that game was. To go from watching Morgan Riley have that giveaway where he gets stripped by Nick Foligno and he gets it over to Boone Jenner and they bury it and make it 3-0, and all hope is gone. All even just illusions that this team could do something. It's over. It's done with. I didn't turn the game off. That's not why I missed the goal. I missed the goal because I was writing stuff. I was writing down my feelings about this team and what I thought needed to change and what I was most upset about in this game. And even just like a guy like Morgan Riley, for example, he goes from being the dude who really did hurt them more than people. He and John Tavares did not take a lot of criticism for game 3, but Tavares makes a pretty risky play as the high forward in the turnover. And Morgan Riley, who's hunting for offense, basically that entire period and a lot of that game. And I know that's what makes him special, but he gets caught and it leaves Tyson Berry, one of their most vulnerable guys defensively, to be the only player defending on a 2-on-1. And then Morgan Rielly has that giveaway and you're just starting to think, man, you're having your Jake Gardner moment here. And then Morgan Rielly's the guy on the ice for all three goals, you know, or sorry, all four goals, really, that he's one of the catalysts to propelling this entire thing. He's the offensive piece that the Leafs rely on the blue line. So yeah, it was spectacular. It's even hard to summarize some of the feelings of this because they're so big, they're so grandiose that we'll try to kind of pare this down into a quick podcast.
Yeah.
But I want to, before we get into the goals and before we get into those moments, because I don't think we need to go over most of that game. Like, the takes are clear, right? It's this. The Leafs came out and they looked flat. They just did. They did not have a bunch of jump. They did not have a bunch of energy. And once they fell down 1-0, you felt like they were in real big trouble, because we talked about this. The first goal in this series is so important because of the differentiating styles in which these two teams play. And Sheldon Keefe has talked about how they like a game like that, that they feel as though they're going to be able to capitalize. But Columbus has proven, I think anyways, through the first four games, that they are the team that is much more comfortable playing a defensive style and then capitalizing on counterattacks. That's what they've done. It's been effective for them. And the Leafs have not been able to do it. And then the 2-0 goal happens. And I think this is where the Leafs fans, the take started to fly around. This is where it started to get pretty ugly between text groups among friends, text groups among Leaf fans, Leafs Twitter, that these guys came out and they provided nothing. That their coach talked about changing the narrative or changing what people say about them. And that they just did not care. And all you could start to think about was, okay, well, what pieces are coming off of this roster? What's changing? Someone's got to be accountable. They already fired their head coach. They just had a huge rest in the season. They've had all this time to try to figure things out. And now you're just wondering if this team knows how to win, if they have ever been able to figure that out and what they need to shake that up. And we'll start with this. I really do believe that the fourth line had an incredible impact yet again, that this doesn't happen without their contributions. Not only because I think that the forwards are a little bit more rested, they play a ton in this game, but they also were able to actually take a few shifts off throughout this game, a few extra ones, because the fourth line was so good. Jason Spezza, that signing is looking incredible.
Mike Babcock didn't want to play him on opening day.
But right.
Yes. Now he's playing integral minutes in an elimination playoff game. And yes, it's very telling that, okay, so the same group of multimillionaire forwards were on the ice for all three goals at the end of the third period, except for the one moment where they needed to take a break. And it was the fourth line. The fourth line got a shift at the end of that game. I was also thinking about the fact that, hey man, it's pretty early in the bubble seasons of the NHL and the NBA and everybody focusing on sports again. We're not even a month into this thing, and things will change and other stories will emerge. But right now, that's the sports story of bubble sports. What happened?
Yeah, there's no question.
And what is happening to the Toronto Maple Leafs? Because it's not just hockey fans. This is a sports story, because this franchise in particular in this sport, which is clearly not anywhere near the other sports in the American sporting consciousness, but this franchise means something. It's like the Red Sox or the Cubs. There's a history to it, and people understand the pain that exists in this fan base, that this story and what happened yesterday goes beyond just this local market. It's now the story of the bubble. And again, that could change, but that's what I also felt yesterday.
No, of course. Of course it is. And again, this is why the Leafs are so important in Toronto. And this is why it was so important that they didn't get embarrassed and that they did come back in this hockey game. It's because the Toronto Maple Leafs are synonymous with this city globally. And and that's not an overstatement, is that when people talk about Toronto, and people meet you from a different place and you say, where are you from? From Toronto. A lot of the response will be Maple Leafs.
Right.
Like, that's a thing. You go to the States, that's what they know, Maple Leafs. That's what they've been conditioned to know. It has always been a part of the identity of the city. And it's something that is different, is that when the Toronto Maple Leafs are embarrassing, the city of Toronto is embarrassed. So yes, of course, this extends beyond sports. I just want to finish my thought on the fourth line here, though, which is just this. People get mad about fighting in sports. People get mad about fighting in hockey. And yes, the fourth line contributed way more than a fight, and the Leafs get scored on after the Jason Spezza fight with Dean Kukan, but he was chucking them. This is Jason Spezza. Leaf fans remember Jason Spezza because he was an absolute Leaf killer when he was with the Ottawa Senators. Not exactly a guy known for his forcible play, and no offense, Sens fans, cover your ears. None of them are listening to this anyways. None of them want to hear this, but Jason Spezza showed more heart for the Toronto Maple Leafs last night than he ever did for the Ottawa Senators. This is the local kid. And I'm sorry, but he stepped up, man. He stepped up massively. He was all over the puck all night long. He was battling in front of the net. He was hard on the forecheck. He was, I thought, the best player on that fourth line. Engvall and Clifford were good, but Spezza was the man on that fourth line. And it wasn't just the fight. It was how he fought. Normally, guys like that, when they have a fight, they look awkward. They don't look like they're all in. They're kind of grabbing each other, pulling each other. Jason Spezza was chucking them. He was throwing haymakers. He wanted to hurt Dean Kukan. He was looking like, who's that? Oh, my God. I'm blanking. I'm just so excited even just thinking about his fight. He looked like Francis Ngannou out there just trying to end somebody's life. I loved it. I will never dismiss the value of a fight in a big moment. I'm sorry. I just won't. I'll never. The stuff where people did the theatrical fights and we had people in the league that were simply there for fighting, I completely understand why that left. I don't think that that was necessary in hockey. But when emotion boils over in a playoff hockey game and a guy like Jason Spezza steps up like that and just throws nucks, he just chucks them nucks the way that he did, I'll never dismiss the value of that.
Well,
so,
and especially in these bubbles. And yeah. This is a conversation we've had ad nauseum since it started, and I keep going back to that noon game. The Carolina and the Rangers played in the first game of the bubble, and having an understanding of how these games were going to get juice, and it was going to come from the players understanding that there is no juice, they need to create it themselves. And that's I'm with you 100%, even though, yes, it goes to 3-0 after the Jason Spezza thing. But that's a real thing. But look at the reaction that happened on that bench. And, yes, yeah. Jason Spezza has been around a little bit, I would say. I think we should maybe defer to the man. Who has been in some positive playoff situations as well. He understood the situation he was in, and maybe it wasn't even as well thought out as that. Maybe it was truly just emotional where, you know, I come to my hometown team, it starts off so poorly with the healthy scratch in game one, and I'm going to be part of the narrative of this team that totally underperformed when I could see this playing out entirely differently, and it was going to be one of the highlights of my career joining my hometown team and winning a Stanley Cup, and it's going to go out like this. Maybe that was it, or maybe it was just, man, I'm going to do whatever. Like, I have limited ways to impact this game. This is one I think will have a positive impact, and if we're just playing the results, it did. Good job, Jason Spezza.
Yeah, I just think that if we're talking about this as the Leafs' most, this is their signature game of this group. It's the signature game of the post-lockout world of the salary cap Maple Leafs. Jason Spezza is he's a big part of this fabric. If this is a, you know, they used to do quilts, right, to tell a story. I remember learning about William the Conqueror, right? You ever hear about that tapestry where they do this tapestry of the entire war of William the Conqueror taking over and defeating England. And yeah, he's one of the biggest squares on the tapestry. He's got to be. Like, Jason Spezza in that fight is going to always be a thing of legend. And he has cemented himself weirdly in this moment as just a Leafs legend, a guy who spent the vast majority of his career killing this franchise, being someone who was hated by members of this franchise or fan base. He has completely flipped that. Jason Spezza is always going to be a hero in the city for not only his play in that game, but yes, the fight, the chucking of the nucks. So let's quickly just go over the goals and then look a little bit ahead to the next game. I don't want to spend too much time looking at the next game because, yeah, it's just, this is an in-the-moment podcast. This is something to celebrate what had just happened and to discuss what had just happened. I thought that the four goals and the first three, especially the game time goals. Yes, of course, they're all with an extra attacker, but they were all symptomatic of things that the Leafs had been missing all game long from that group. And I think that that deserves just a quick dissection. So first of all, pucks on net, man. And I know that that sounds so cliche, and that's just the, you know, sometimes you think, oh, this is just lazy hockey analysis. It's just guys yelling pucks on net, pucks on net. Why not set it up and why not get a better shot? oh, pass up the bad look for a clean look, and that's how you end up with some of these goals. Absolutely, you do. But the Leafs are a team that often gets criticized for overpassing in the offensive zone. And I think that it's a fair criticism that a lot of times there are players that look to pass first and they'll give up shooting lanes. And here you have the first goal where it's just Mitch Marner gets a puck and he fires it in towards the goal, and four Maple Leafs are just crowded around there. Nylander's battling in front and he bangs it home. And big moment for a guy who gets called a perimeter player a lot of the times, and William Nylander, that his two goals in this series are both where? Right in front of the net. And it's why people talk about it, because he's clearly more effective there. Like, he's awesome in front of the net. There's data to support that he's not a perimeter player, but this was a big moment for him. And this was just a big moment in terms of just the value of that, of when things are not going your way, when you have a really red hot goaltender, the way that Merzlikins was, just fire it on net. Just get it on net, get bodies in front of there and chip one in and get an ugly one. And during the intermission, Elliot Friedman was talking about how that's not really them. And that's exactly what I thought, as they were saying, they needed a greasy goal. They needed a gritty goal to get this thing started. And that's exactly what they got. And they kind of pushed away against their identity and it worked for them. And I hope that it unlocks a little bit of something for them, just because versatility and ways to win is so important in sports. If you can only win one way, it makes you an easier team to beat. And if the Leafs can now become a team that adds this to their arsenal a little bit more, which is, hey, we funnel it in and we crash in front of the net and we play tough in front of the net, I just think that that makes them a better team overall.
We know they're capable of it too, because here's the thing, yep. in watching the three goals that were all scored 6-on-5, this is one of the best teams. I mean, they scored I think they're second in the NHL in 6-on-5 goals with the extra attacker this year. And this is the reason, I think, because they simplify the offense. Because in those moments, there's just too many bodies on the ice to pass through them. You just can't. You just have to throw as many bodies at the net, throw the puck at the net, and it resulted in the goal that you're talking about. We know that that's in their arsenal. Would they like to make five different passes, end it with a little backdoor tap in, of course, but at the end of the game, when you have a 6-on-5, that's how many 6-on-5 goals look exactly like the one that William Nylander did? I would say most of them. Most of them do. It's got to be encouraging.
So I think, again, it leads back to a theory I have about the power play sometimes, which is that, you know, the Leafs, again, they had a moment in this hockey game where they had back-to-back power plays and couldn't capitalize. And one is that they didn't get pucks on the net. And the second part of it is what leads to the second and third goals, which is what I wanted to bring up next, which is zone entries. So part of this is that Columbus sort of abandons their aggressiveness of trying to keep the puck out of their own end, and it ends up actually really hurting them. But the second goal, again, the Leafs have been struggling to enter the zone on the power play. They've been struggling to have clean entries all night long. They clearly were doing a little bit more dump and chase in this game because it was not working for them. Columbus had done an excellent job of shutting down the blue line. But now they play a little bit back on their heels, and Matthews just gains it easily. Like, he just basically walks to the corner, finds Tavares wide open in the slot, and that's what you pay John Tavares all the money for. That's why you get excited that you have John Tavares, is because when you give him that opportunity, he's going to bury it. He's one of those guys that's capable of just picking the top corner on Elvis Merzlikins and all of a sudden giving you hope. And that was the moment where, okay, how did you feel after that goal? Because I was almost frustrated. Like, I was actually almost a little pissed off that they had done this. And I was like, as if you guys are going to do this, as if you're going to make it 3-2 or 4-2 when they score an empty netter.
No, I actually had hope at that point, because there's so much time left. And like I said, this team has scored so many 6-on-5 goals and they just scored two in this hockey game. You've got 2+ minutes left. You put Anderson back in there. I thought, Anderson goes back in. And then you wait another 30 seconds to a minute before pulling him again and then going for the tie. But I absolutely had hope in that moment. It was so much like the first two goals happened so quickly that I really did feel a momentum change. And I felt like, man, I might be witnessing a moment. I allowed myself to go there, which is probably in the history of this franchise, not a smart move. If you go back and look back at the times where you thought things would end well for the Maple Leafs and didn't. But in that moment, I felt like something was happening.
See, I felt like something was happening when Columbus shot.
Yes, I also thought that. Into the side of the net. When I mean, there were multiple times there, 6-on-5, where the Jackets absolutely should have, could have scored into the empty net. And once it's a couple of guys in front of the net blocking a shot. And the other was, yeah, like I've seen a lot of things. How often do you see a puck get shot into the plastic thing on the outside of the net? Like never, like that doesn't happen. And, and it happens in a game in which you come back and score 3-6-on-5 goals. That felt like a sign.
In Sochi, the Canadian women's hockey team was getting pounded by the United States. They couldn't buy one. It was very similar. You know, they're down and they're just looking for something. They're looking for just a little glimmer of hope. And the United States clears the puck down. They take a shot at the empty net and it lands on the post and it just sits there. And it's kind of an iconic Canadian hockey image of just seeing that puck. If you show that puck on the post to a Canadian hockey fan, they're going to know what that is, right? And now I think that's going to be very similar with this puck that gets shot at an empty net with what, like 50 seconds left.
Yeah.
And instead of going in, it, what looks like, again, this is how many, I thought it was in.
I thought
that snaps off the back of the net and it's into the corner and the game's over. And instead it hits the side of the net and the Leafs are screaming for them to, you know, blow the play dead because they're saying it's at the side of the net. It's trapped. They can't get to it. And that's when I started to believe. That's when I started to hope. And I was like, oh my God, that's the type of break you need. That's what you need. Whenever we talk about hockey, again, you get into cliches, but it's because the cliches, it has a meaning sometimes. And this was, you finally got your bounce. You finally got your break. Here it is. Now capitalize on it. And guess what? They did. The third goal, exact same thing. Zone entry. Nylander gains the zone, and this is why you get these guys, and this is why you have these guys, and this is why your identity is because you have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Morgan Rielly, John Tavares, five guys on the ice who can all supposedly do one thing, gain the zone with their heads up, gain the zone and be able to find somebody and do something with it. And again, this is what happens. Nylander gains the zone, gets it to Hyman. Hyman, who I actually thought really turned up his game in the second half of the third period and then overtime, he went from being someone who I kind of had this take of Hyman's a little in over his head in this series just because Columbus's blue line is so big and physical and that he's just not having the same effectiveness playing up a weight class. And here he was defying that. But he makes a beautiful little give and go play with Matthews, slides it over to him, gets it back to Hyman, and he buries what I think is the softest goal on Merzlikins. But again, it's a Columbus team that let the Leafs lean into their identity. And if John, I can just only imagine John Tortorella losing his goddamn mind watching this, the video back and watching these plays, because you just look at everything and what is Columbus doing? They're collapsing to the net. They're giving the Maple Leaf space. And if you give players with that skill, that kind of space and time, then this is what's going to happen. So Hyman buries it. Merzlikin looks completely distraught. And the celebration where everybody meets behind the net, you felt as though they had won the game. Again, fan base thinks they've won the game. And then you had to kind of recalibrate. Before we get to the overtime goal, were you surprised that they went back to Merzlikins? Because during our phone call, I said to you, they've got to put in ice cold Korpisalo or they've got to go with a kid who clearly was rattled on that third goal. And the camera shot of him hanging his head, it seemed pretty clear that this is a dejected goaltender that had completely lost the swagger he had for the first five periods of play that he had had.
Well, let's go back to how he ended up in this series. It was being down 3-0 to this Leafs team, and Korpisalo didn't look bad, I don't think. He looked outstanding to start the series, but he didn't look bad. That was like a momentum changer, though. John Tortorella not necessarily looking at the style his goaltender's playing or the weakness that he's showing or the body language, just trying to do something, just trying to pull a lever, and he ends up in this series. In that moment, though, there was, as you said, like real reason to look at not like it's a twofold thing. It's like you want to change the momentum, which was clearly, I mean, a team scores three goals in 4 minutes to force overtime. That's a momentum changer. But also, yeah, we all have eyes. We saw what happened. The quality of those goals were not upper echelon. And you've got a young goaltender who clearly looks like this moment has overwhelmed him. And your other option, it's not like there's a clear delineation between one and two goalies. We knew going into the series it was going to be a major question mark who was going to get the start in game one. And you'd probably see both by the end of the series. I thought absolutely we were going to see Korpisalo in that overtime, and I'm shocked we didn't. I think for sure Korpisalo is going to start in game five on Sunday, but I'm with you, man. I thought that was the move for sure for Tortorella.
See, one of my biggest takes was going to be, this is the importance of having two real goaltenders, and this is not a shot at Jack Campbell, because I do think that he's a capable backup, but you and I talked a lot before, but we talked a lot before this season about how the NHL is going to, if I'm making a prediction about where it's going and what's going to change, is that goaltenders are going to become more like running backs, yep. Where if you don't have two, you have none. And
with Carolina didn't lose a game, right, between the second last game and the last game against the Rangers, but they were on back-to-back days. So they go from Mrazek, who was good in the series, to James Reimer, who closes out that series. That's kind of how a lot of teams are doing it.
Yeah, and Freddie Anderson, who's not used to playing in back-to-backs, who does not have a good track record when he has played back-to-backs, you're kind of thinking, well, you know what? Leafs, maybe he's a little tired. Maybe he makes one of those saves. Maybe the one where, you know, it comes in a little bit soft, and it's the second goal, that his reaction time is a little better. Who knows? Like, you're just trying to string this stuff together. But Merzlikins was so good, and he looks fresh, and they were able to flip over to him, and it seemed to be one of the stories of the series so far. And now I actually look at Columbus, and I think you're almost in a worse position here, where, you know, you've either got to go to Merzlikins, who just got shelled, and who, again, as a young player, has probably not experienced that. Well, he definitely hasn't at the NHL level, but just the feeling of a comeback of that magnitude, and knowing that third goal, especially, you have to have one of those saves, but the third one is definitely the one that he'll probably look at and say, God, the rest of my days until we win a Stanley Cup, I'm going to think about that goal. Or you go to Korpisalo, who the last time they saw him, the Leafs had kind of figured out, they shook him, and then his team said, hey, we don't really believe in you, we're going away from you, and he sat for what is essentially now two games. Like, they don't have a great option in net here. I don't know who they're going to go to, and maybe we should save that a little bit just for looking forward to the next game. But what looked to be a clear advantage for Columbus now looks like a disadvantage for them. The Leafs know who they have in net. Freddie Anderson's going to be able to get his rest today and come back knowing that it is going to be the most important game of his career. So the overtime goal. Leafs lose the draw, and this is where I want to talk about Mitch Marner, because Marner took a lot of crap for his game one performance. I think he deserved it. He was just okay in game two, but game three, he was buzzing. And before the Leafs lost, he was to me the major storyline of the game, or one of them anyways, up behind Matthews and Tavares, which was, hey, if Mitch Marner gets his legs going, and you all know what Mitch Marner looks like when he's buzzing, when he's actually going, it's a completely different guy. And in that overtime, he changed that. And this is what happens. They lose the draw, and he gets in on the forecheck because he's actually sneaky good at that. He doesn't have size. He's not going to come in and be a bruiser, but he uses his stick extremely well, and he forces a really weak backhand that ends up with Riley. Riley handles it easier, gets it back to Marner, and Marner makes just a really crafty backhand pass to Tavares, who from there is, again, wide open in the slot, again, has a bunch of time and space, and because he's John Tavares, and because the Toronto Maple Leafs know Austin Matthews plays for their team, and anyone who's getting it there is at least going to take a second to look for Matthews, they find Matthews. He's one of the best goal scorers on the planet. And guess what? If you're going to give him a cross-crease feed where he can step into it and take a long look at the net, 8 times out of 10, he's going to finish that one. And he does, and the rest is history. The Leafs lose it, and Columbus is in now the team that is in a tailspin. But again, Mitch Marner deserves a lot of credit on this play. This is an Austin Matthews goal. It's always going to be an Austin Matthews moment. But for me, I will never forget. It's kind of like, it's a little bit like John Tavares is not the guy who I'm crediting with the assist on this thing. It's Mitch Marner who I'm crediting with the assist. He's the Jerome Iginla to the golden goal here.
Yeah, and I would say just in an overall sense, all four of those forwards they get a ton of credit for all of them. Yes. For everything.
Of course they do.
It's all them. Right. If we're going to kill them, even if it's not necessarily their fault, like Austin Matthews has been great this entire series, but I'm sure there would have been a ton of heat headed his way. And John Tavares is the captain, even though he's been pretty good, save for game one. If we're going to kill those guys for potentially losing the series, they get all the credit in the world. They were worth every penny in those moments in the final 4 minutes and then in overtime. And yes, it's also fitting that they score a power play goal in this thing. Mm-hmm. that's supposed to be their strength. It has been at times this season, but it's been so inconsistent. And it just felt like that had to happen. They had to score in overtime, considering the dramatics we saw at the end of the game. And just watching some of the videos of the reaction after the game in the hallway. Of course, we've all seen Justin Bieber now watching the game. It just,
I love Bieber so much.
Yeah, Bieber. Yeah, remember when it was not cool to like Bieber? And perhaps in some circles it isn't. It's certainly cool to
You're
like
insecure. Bieber. You're insecure if you don't like Bieber. It's just a fact. I'm sorry. It's just a fact. If you don't like Biebs, you're insecure.
And I would talk even about, if you don't like his music, yeah, you're also insecure. Yeah.
Dude, I got to say too, Haley Baldwin, underrated. Underrated ride or die. Like, if you watch this video, this is for the few. But she is a celebrity. And she has just agreed to go live with Justin Bieber in Ontario, where she's not from. And she's just in bed watching the Toronto Maple Leafs on a Friday night in their house. Like, okay, do you think that a Kardashian is doing that? You think that Kim Kardashian is doing that for Kanye, you know, like watching the Bulls game on a Friday night?
And Visa instead. It's like, we could sit here in our bedroom and watch a hockey game, a sport that I've only learned existed in the last 5 years, or we could literally be anywhere else in the world.
Yep. Yeah.
No, let's be here.
You think you marry Justin Bieber? You think most girls marry Justin Bieber and think, like, this is our life. We're going to go live in Kitchener, wherever he is, and watch the Leafs on Friday night and just do it in our bed. No. Bieber's reaction is real. And Haley Baldwin, the way she's celebrating that with him, living in Kitchener, celebrating it in the bed, screaming at the TV, complete ride or die. I'm all in on Haley Baldwin. I think that we should all be searching for our Haley Baldwin, the woman or the man who absolutely backs us in our moments with our teams, who feels that same love for us. And it's just, even if you don't love the Leafs, you just love your partner in that way where you could celebrate it like that. Anyway, Haley Baldwin.
I don't want to bury my wife, but here's the thing. There's way more riding on this for me personally and professionally. The Maple Leafs come back and win that game. My wife had no idea what happened, okay? She wasn't with me watching the game.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. I didn't mean to make it personal for you, but maybe you don't have your Haley. You know, maybe there's only some of us that get a Haley. So, yeah, last couple thoughts, a quick couple of parting thoughts on this game. So there is still a game 5. Sports are not a fairy tale, even though it felt like one yesterday. And so there's a part of me that feels as though this is just, you know, this is the right of the Maple Leafs at this point. No, they're going to have to come out and play a really hard game. But I do think that the Leafs had to overcome the shock and the awe of losing that game 3, and that it was part of their slow start in game 4. And I'm still anticipating that for a team like Columbus, that it's going to be a similar spot that they're in, and they're going to have to do it. Do we have an update on Zach Werenski? Yeah, I was kind of looking him up.
Yeah, no, there's nothing definitive on what it was. Of course, people are thinking it's maybe a shoulder, but yeah, it's got to be pretty serious. The guy doesn't play the overtime of what could be a game of a series. That's not like a nick and like, hey, it's precautionary. It's like my arm's falling off, maybe.
Yeah. And even if he does play, he's not going to be fully healthy Zach Werenski. And he's one of their most important players. Like, this is a team that does not have a lot of offense. I know that you don't feel that way when they come back from down 3-0, but Zach Werenski scored 20 goals for them this season. He's a top pairing defenseman. Yeah. You lose him, and it really does even the Muzzin scale of, well, now you don't have your defensive stalwart. Well, guess what? Now they don't have their offensive guy who provides them kind of similarly with the Maple Leafs, where it's like he's the guy who does the thing that no one else really does. I know Seth Jones can provide offense. He can jump up in the rush, but Zach Werenski's kind of a different beast. And now it kind of feels like you've evened the scales a little bit between these two teams. So, yeah, momentum, I think that's in the Leafs' corner. The difference about why I think that they have such a good shot in this game is I kind of said it. I don't know if this team knew how to win. I don't know if they do after one experience like this, but I feel more confident that they are going to show up for this game, that they do now have we believe in ourselves that was missing a little bit, and that they're looking at the finish line of getting into the Stanley Cup playoffs and getting through this series. And that, yeah, they're just the team with the upper hand. They've got the goalie that you'd prefer in this game out of the two guys. They've got certainly the forwards that you would prefer, and you just hope that they've unlocked something different. And that they can be the ones that, oh God, I don't even know. Actually, I was going to say, you could hope that they can be the ones that set the tone and get the lead in this game. But the way things are going, it's like, maybe first goal loses. Maybe you don't want that.
Here's what happened. Maple Leafs had a near-death experience. They were right there. They're all their poor life choices, smoking cigarettes and drinking 10 beers a day. They had a heart attack and they were at death's door, and maybe their soul departed their body for a brief moment, and then it went back into their body and they were defibrillated and returned to life. And you know what happened? They went home and realized, man, I don't want that to happen again. I understand now. They're going to change their life. They're going to change their lifestyle. No more cigarettes, no more booze, straight and narrow. That's got to be the thought process, I think, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, because it was right there. The obits were being written. The offseason was there. All the takes were set and ready to be fired off, and you were at the precipice, and you backed off. It has to change your mindset, I think.
Yeah. Submit this to Reader's Digest. Submit this to Reader's Digest of your near-death experience and appreciate life a little bit more. Man, I just appreciate sports. Yeah, for the Leafs, their life was almost cut short. For Leaf fans, you haven't had a lot to celebrate. So, yeah, soak this one in. Enjoy this one because, again, Sunday night, you're going to strap yourself down into the torture chamber. You're going to be back with all those anxieties and all those feelings of just despair. But for a day, for this beautiful Saturday in the city of Toronto and the country of Canada, you get to just kind of be able to soak this thing up and feel good for once as a Leaf fan. Hold your head high as a Leaf fan. If you like this podcast, subscribe to it. You can subscribe to either Leafs Hour or Good Shows podcast streams, both of them. You can follow it on Spotify as well. If you enjoyed this, especially these emergency podcasts that we string together, just please leave us a review. Share it on Twitter, share it on social media, repost it, all of those different things. It really does help us a lot. And so, yeah, Leafs Nation, we appreciate you. Thanks for listening to this sucker. And see you in the torture chamber Sunday night.
Yeah, I'll see you in the torture chamber. And then, of course, our show, which is available in podcast form after we do it, we'll be back on Monday, of course, 9 to noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be reacting to Sunday in either manner, whatever happens. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.